Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to You, the Best Invention Ever, featuring host Valencia Lyle Saunders, a show dedicated to inspiring you to invent something incredible, your life.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to You, the Best Invention Ever. We're back again the last Saturday of the month, which is kind of the, I don't know if Halloween's going to happen, people. We have like a really nasty storm brewing, but, you know, Halloween is Halloween, so you do whatever you do that day. Anyway, I'm really glad to be back with all my friends, party peoples, as I call you, for another interesting show. But first, I just want to get to some other business. I want you to, you know, we cannot help but know the election is coming, and I know it's redundant, but please, please go vote and make sure that you are, all that needs to be in order is in order for you to vote, because it is your right, and it is the right thing to do. So I just want to encourage everyone to do what it is that is right for you. You know, it doesn't matter who you vote for, just vote. Because once your rights are stripped or minimalized, you don't get those things back. So that's my sermon on voting and weather preparedness. All righty, we know something's coming. We don't know what's coming, but it's better to be prepared than underprepared. So go get your water. Go get stocked up. Get lots of cookies. You know, take it easy on the ice cream. We don't know if we'll have electricity in some places, so we don't want that to go to waste. Anyway, let's get to it. I am really, really excited and happy to introduce a very, very good friend of mine. His name is Stephen Parker, and I'm going to let him classify himself. But he, you know, reads tarot cards, and he's a great palm reader. Palmist, I'm going to say, not palm reader, that sounds so gypsy in the caravan. And he's from New Hampshire. And not only is, you know, he's got several components to his life. He has had his own radio show as a disc jockey, and I want to talk to him about that and a whole bunch of other things. But let me introduce you to Stephen Parker.
That's me.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, where are you?
Well, if you want me to categorize myself, I would say basically human.
That's a good start.
Maybe part alien, but I don't really use any kind of handle or categorization, such as like a psychic, or I didn't plan on doing what I do. For 42 years, I've been able to read the cards, and for 40 years, I've done the palms. And I was fortunate enough when I was in high school, my guidance counselor would allow his students to come in and talk about UFOs and reincarnation.
Really?
Much more interesting than going to a study hall.
Yeah, really.
And he knew a woman whom he had a vested interest, because he was crushing on her a little bit. So he later married her. But he knew this woman named Eleanor, who was a natural intuitive. She was not trained by anyone. She came into this after she had had a hysterectomy in her 30s and had a series of visions and just started knowing things about people and talking to them. So he was sending his students to her. And I had heard about her from I had heard about her from two girls at the school who were planning to run away to Florida. They had told no one else that they were going to do this, so they were curious and went to see her. When they came in, she gave them cookies, and without even asking them anything about themselves, she said, Florida is really nice this time of year, but if you're thinking of going there, I wouldn't, because you'll never get there. So that was the kind of person that she was. She just knew. She was, you know, if she were alive, she passed 20 years ago, but if she were alive, I'd say, talk to her, don't talk to me. She was the real thing.
Wow.
And
wow,
we had a very
wow.
human friendship and association. There were times when we didn't get along. So,
okay.
So to, yeah, she didn't call herself a psychic, so I followed her cue in that, you know, we were just people with a certain type of perception, let's say. And
mm-hmm.
I can't put it on a scale of 1 to 10, or I don't try to vainly or even simply compare myself to anybody else. You know, this is a day and age when a lot of people, of course, you know, they say new agers, you know, they kind of use that cliche term, are
yeah.
Doing readings
mm-hmm.
in all sorts of capacities and doing healing with Reiki and with energy work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't advertise. I don't have any. People always say, do you have a business card even? I don't even have a business card.
Wow.
But
wow.
It's all word of mouth, but it's kept
That's
me going
really cool.
And I pretty much do it full time. So
that is very cool, and it says a lot about what you do and how well you do it.
Well, thank you.
It really does.
I mean,
it really does. I actually know.
We've known each other how long? 5 minutes?
Oh,
no.
My God. Yeah, all the 5 minutes. So, you know, and like you said, there are a lot of people. There's the Long Island Medium. There are
right.
those kinds of shows, all these life after shows. And there seems to be, I don't know if you want to call it an awakening or an accelerated interest in more mystical, more, you know, I don't know, interests.
I think people really want something to hold on to that is beyond just formal and organized religion and belief systems, that gives them
mm-hmm.
Some kind of insight into what are we doing here, why are we doing this, what are we doing, you know, where are we going with it, you know, meaning life itself.
Yeah.
But I try to keep it, you know, for myself, what I've learned is, you know, try to keep it as simple, because the most mystical things are right in the mundane, in the mundane world, the simple world, such as just when, you know, this sounds corny, but when I'm out walking, if I see, I live in a very rural area, so if I see a beautiful patch of leaves in the forest, but I see one turned around that has perhaps a different color, and it looks like the leaf that's marching to a different drummer, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's the kind of thing that really brings back brings home or underscores the idea that, you know, everybody's unique and everything, you know, your own life is important no matter how you feel about yourself. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
just really important. So when I'm doing a reading, there are no boring readings, because every person has something in them that's unique and you can learn from every person. So I really feel that when I'm reading for people, generally, it works pretty well. That once in a while, you know, you can't please all the people all the time. Once in a while, you'll get into a situation where you'll be doing this work for someone, and it just doesn't click all that well. But generally,
mm-hmm.
it does. But I always
wow.
learn something no matter what.
I think that's interesting. Like, you're reading someone else, and they're there to hear and learn from you. But what is it that you're getting from other people when you read them that you're learning?
Well, I can give you an example. I used to work at a school, at a Head Start school. And
mm-hmm.
in that school, when I worked there, this was 1979, 1980, there were 6 sets of twins, 4
wow.
of them identical sets. And
mm-hmm.
one was Jehovah's Witness, so I didn't try to analyze
right.
them, because they can't even they can't even celebrate
right.
Holidays of any kind, even birthdays. But I was able to look at the handprints. I took ink prints of 2 of the little girls who were like 5 years old with permission from their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really fascinating, what I learned from them is, you know, in terms of the hands, is that no two people have exactly identical hands. They may have similar hands or hand,
mm-hmm.
handprints or lines on the hand. And even identical twins don't have identical lines. I mean,
wow.
There was a TV show, and I can't think of the name of it, but these 2 sisters from England who
mm-hmm.
believed that they were one soul split into 2 bodies. So they said that we aren't just twins, we are the same person. I'm not
wow.
sure, you know, in my opinion, if I believe that, but, I mean, anything's possible. So, you know, it's fine with me. If that's what they want to believe, that's great.
That's right. That's
but I think if I looked at their palms, you could see the individual differences.
Right.
Because in the identical twins, in the identical twins that I looked at, you could see which twin was the more serious one, which one was the more flighty and kind of giggly and comedic one. So, I mean, and the lines really did support the meanings of the lines, which I knew enough about, did support their personalities as they came across to people.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, when you read palms, I want to know when is my end game date, but and see how long that is. But is that really significant? Because I've heard some people say has nothing to do with the length of the line.
It has nothing to do with the length of the lifeline whatsoever. The lifeline is located, it begins about an inch or an inch and a half below the index finger, depending on the size of your hand. If you have a larger hand, it's going to be a wider space. And it's a little crescent or semicircle that goes around underneath where the thumb attaches to the rest of the palm. So that you have this mount of flesh and you have this semicircular or crescent demarcation. That's the lifeline. Now, if it's going around in a complete half circle and doesn't have any breaks or any intersections, that's a full lifeline. But then people make the mistake of saying, oh, if it's a full lifeline, it means I'm going to live to be 150 years old. Well, it doesn't mean that. The lifeline is a composite of all the energies, mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. It's a mini map in itself of the quality of the line of the energy that you have at your disposal to use in that lifetime. But as far as longevity, if a reader was able to look at somebody's lifeline and say, you're going to live to be 73 and a half years old and you're going to pass on October 12th, 2029, and they were right, it wouldn't be the lifeline they were getting that information from.
Right. Wow.
So the lifeline is very useful for determining the likelihood of application of energy in a positive or negative way. That's really, and on all those levels too, mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. So, it's a lot more than people think and a lot less. It's less in that it doesn't tell you the longevity factor, but it's more in that it covers every energy, not just your physical life.
Okay, that's a good, thanks for clarifying that. So, okay, people, don't get scared. How short it is.
It's always fun
to
have 20 people in a room. And especially if they're like, very professorial and very, really stuffy kind of, people who fancy themselves very intellectual, and you start talking about the lifeline, and they all start sneaking a peek at their hands, and then you drop they say, don't tell me if it's long or short, and I say, well, I don't have to. I'll describe it, and you can look for yourself. And then somebody will, usually in the group will groan and go, oh, my gosh, I have a short lifeline. And I'm going, well, the good news is it doesn't mean what you think.
Right.
And the not-so-good news is it means you have to pace yourself, because when it is shorter, the person might have a tendency to do things in a more impulsive fashion, or they may not, or if it's a weak line, they may have less physical energy. But they're not going to die.
Right.
It doesn't mean they're going to die the following Tuesday or anything.
That's right. Well, you better mow that lawn because... You're not going to be
there's an old Zen saying, before enlightenment, chopping wood and carrying water. After enlightenment, chopping wood and carrying water.
I have one here. Soulmates. Everybody's looking for, that catchphrase. I want to find my soulmate. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Does it mean anything?
To me, just in my travels, and this is just my opinion, I'm not trying to proselytize or preach this to anyone, but I think the idea of soulmate, if you break it down to the concept or the idea of what you believe a soul to be. I think the soul is the vehicle in which our spirit is kind of, I don't say encased, but it kind of is housed or lives, in our bodies through our soul. So I think the soul kind of carries the spirit. The spirit's infinite, so it's our link to infinity. It's our link to everything that we probably were connected to before we came into this life and where we will probably travel or end up after this life. And so I think with the soul aspect, and as far as other individual souls, some schools of thought say there are over souls or group souls, meaning that there are groups of human beings whose souls are all connected as one kind of, they're kind of like little centipedes. They're little facets of each other. I think when the popular notion about a soulmate is that somebody's going to meet the love of their life, you know, the person that they really resonate with, that they're going to have this beautiful utopian heaven on earth experience, you know, sort of like Twilight movies or whatever. But, well, I don't think we have to go that far because then we'd be vampires, so forget that.
There you go. I know.
Scratch that.
But
I, think with soulmates, as far as, yeah, you know, when I'm doing readings, a lot of people do, the bottom line with a large number of people is like they want to get a reading to find out, are they going to meet that person? Are they going to meet that perfect partner? And I'm not saying a person can't, and I'm not being a cynic and saying it doesn't happen. You know, I think I've seen examples where people are extremely compatible and extremely happy and do achieve a high degree of union with a partner in this lifetime. I myself haven't found that, but but soulmate, I think when you get down to the esoteric or the spiritual connotation of soulmate, it would be two beings in human form who might have similar goals or aspirations, or their purposes intertwine in a way that it expresses something very positive and changes the lives of not only themselves but other people in the world. So I think people look for the partnership to have that human element of love with another person. But in the spiritual sense, I think a soulmate could be, your parent could be your soulmate. Your sibling could be your soulmate. I think you know, a soulmate in terms of soul as a spiritual concept could be anybody that you have union with, that you work on something that is evolutionary, you know, that does and revolutionary, that changes and causes or brings about a process of something improving or evolving. So I think on a romantic level, same thing is looked for. The two people want to be, you know, they want to be alone humanly. They want to be with somebody that they really resonate with. And I do think it's possible. I don't think it's just a cliche term.
Wow. I love that. I love that you've explained it that way, because it really, you know, for myself, I'm just looking at that word in a whole nother way. You know, and the evolution of your experience on Earth with someone else.
Well, I think it can be anything. Soul can be everything from the deepest level of sensuality to the highest or even limitless level of transcendence. I think it can be both. I think it is both. I think it's all those gradations that may fall, so to speak, in between. So that, I mean, certainly nothing wrong with sensuality, sexuality, you know, physical union. Those things are really important, and for people to repress them or to become obsessed with them, those two extremes kind of, you know, they kind of negate the whole inner core of the soulmate concept. But I do think it's possible, yeah. I think that it's human. I think there's a human instinct to want to it's not just an animal instinct. It's a human and spiritual instinct to try to find that complement to your deepest energy.
I love it. I love it. Well, Steve, I think we have a caller on the line. Let's see what they want to ask. Hi, caller. Caller. Hello, caller.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay. So it's Suzanne calling, and I'm listening to your guy, the show, and it's very interesting. And I'm just curious to know, like, this whole soulmate level and the whole kind of connection that we make with people. You know, I just wonder, when you meet certain people and you have that connection to them, you know, what does that mean? And sometimes you meet people that you really have such strong negative feelings, and it's so rare, and I always wonder the meaning behind that sometimes, and I just wondered if you could talk a little about that.
Hi, Suzanne. This is Steve. I'm going to take a few minutes to respond to that. I have to just say to the whole audience, pardon me, I'm very verbal.
Just
gag me when I get carried away. But number one, you know, your question is the way you phrase your question is really interesting because you did bring in the word negative. And with soulmate, rather than thinking of it like a Hallmark card or like some wonderful, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, criticize, you know, Marianne Williamson or anybody that's an inspirational speaker or writer or Deepak Chopra, but the idea, to me, behind soulmate is, yes, your soulmate could even be somebody that you don't necessarily always resonate with because the soul factor, as it expresses through the human, may not always come up. Let's say you have two inventors, and one has one aspect of the invention, the other has the other aspect, but they argue about how it should be done. But once they pool their efforts, they realize that each has half of the answer of how this invention should be put together and manifested in the world. So I think soulmates can work in that way too. So I don't think it always has to be just this romantic connotation.
I agree with you. I think what I'm really curious about is I feel like I'm a very sensitive person, and most people I meet, I tend to like them. And there are a couple people that I've met that I really get such a strong feeling for them in the opposite way. And I'm always fascinated. I always have to listen to it because it doesn't happen that often. I could count them on one hand, really. But you get such a strong, like, oh, you know, and it's you don't know where it comes from. And I'm just always curious. Like, I was talking about this with Valencia one time and, you know, just trying to piece it together. Like, if you have I don't know what my beliefs in past lives and all those things are, but I'm always just, it was like, when I feel so strongly about someone, like, I try to determine what it could come from. You know, it's not, like, necessarily what they're wearing, or you hope it's not on a totally superficial level because it feels so deep because it doesn't happen to me that often. So I'm curious about that. I can have a soulmate, like, you know, your future spouse, but they're friends, people you meet, you just click with. It could be someone you meet on the train, or
absolutely.
They're just people
it could
that
be
just
somebody that you don't have significant interaction with in that lifetime in terms of, you know, it may be somebody that you meet for a you interact with for a very short period of time, but they have this very profound effect. On your life. Some people say, oh, well, that's just your guardian angel, or that's just somebody that came into your life to move your life. Well, yes, on certain levels, yes, but they can also be soulmate because they really, it was almost like there was a, you know, a job assigned to them or mutually to both of you to have that impact on each other.
I think that's true.
Let me give a little bit of an example that might sound morbid or scary. I'll tell you give you a little excerpt on something that happened. Years ago, I was reading for this woman. I was actually looking at her hands. I wasn't doing her cards or just reading her off the top of my head. She had asked for a palm reading. So I was reading for her, and, of course, there were certain, you know, configurations on the lines on her hand, and I was focusing, and as I was focusing, I don't know if it was telepathy or just empathy, and I was just picking it up from her, but I started getting really deep impressions about a line that was coming off of her lifeline. It was kind of attached to it. And I said, you know, I think that with you, I said, you experienced a really, really profound loss. And she started to tense up. And I wasn't just paying attention to her body language. I was really just, I wanted to see her energy. I wasn't trying to, you know, I don't play guessing games with this because you can't, because it is what it is. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
Right.
So as I was looking at the line and focusing and going deeper into it, I said, I have this sense that you had this profound loss and that the loss was a family member, and even beyond that, you felt responsible for it. And she started to cry. And I said, you know, I said, I know what this is. And I said, is it okay to say? And she goes, no. She said, keep going. I said, it was one of your children. And I had to stop there because I was getting emotional. And so I said, you lost one of your children. You felt responsible for the loss. And he said, as any parent would feel helpless if their child, any reasonable parent would feel helpless.
Right.
Filled in the blank. What had happened was she had a son. She had two daughters and a son. Her son was the youngest, and she was in a marriage. She was in one of those till death do us part people, very loyal. But her husband was very psychologically and emotionally cruel to her. So they were out driving, she and the son. and a drunk driver forced them off the road, and the car hit a tree on the boy's, on the passenger side, and the boy was killed.
Oh, my God.
So she ended up having a complete breakdown because the husband, unable to get to the person that caused the accident, took it out on her. When she recovered from her breakdown and got past it, she divorced him. She later remarried. She went back to school. She became a school teacher. She even became teacher of the year in the state that she moved to.
Right.
And she, in her new marriage, she had a fourth child, a boy. Now, I didn't make any speculations about him being the same soul reborn because I don't know that to be true or not. I had a feeling that that might be the case. But my point is this. That boy was probably as much his mother's soulmate. The woman I learned from, Eleanor, would have called him, she had a term, she would have said he was a death angel. And I said, well, what does that mean when she said that one day? She said, sometimes souls will come into a lifetime briefly to have a great impact on society. So you could say, even like, let's take Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, people that didn't stay, you know, and didn't live to be elderly people in the physical. They come in, they have a profound effect on their environment, both positively, negatively, in every sense of the word, every qualification. And I think that when you bring that idea of somebody having that profound effect, when you bring it back to the concept of soulmates or let's just say two individuals interacting, it's pretty much the same thing. It's two people moving each other in some way. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to marry and stay married, you know, for you know, 60, 70 years.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the contract that's made between people. Sometimes, you know, if you if you were around somebody and they had really they had sprayed themselves with garlic or something that really was offensive to your nostrils, you would react. So what's happening to you when you're around certain people? You're very empathic. You know, just the sound of your voice when you first started asking your question. Your voice is very clear, very intelligent, a little naive. I'm sorry, a little naive. I'm very open. You're very much a glass half full, not half empty. You're not a cynical person whatsoever. Doesn't mean you don't get depressed or don't ever have moody times, but you're generally a very positive person. And I think that what happens is you get around people and your little Geiger counter starts ticking when you get around somebody that's really radioactive, or at least that's how you're reacting to them. You feel it. You actually physically feel it.
I do.
And
very
I think
much
that
so.
That's it's a good key to the fact that you can trust you can trust your intuition. Your intuition is very, you see, because you're a very objective person. You're not sitting there prejudging. You're just reacting to an actual like chemical and energetic interaction with you and another person. It's not like you're saying this person's good, bad, or indifferent. But then as you react to it, you can start to interpret it. Should I, you know, maybe distance myself from this person? Should I, you know, would it be wise for me to engage with this person, to interact with them? And I think that, you know, that will increase the longer you're here in this particular lifetime. That will increase. As far as the idea of, you know, like reincarnation and all that, you were saying you didn't know exactly what you believed. I can't sit here and say, you know, 100% conclusively. I'm not, and I can't play God with that, you know, but I like the idea on an intellectual level of reincarnation, because then I get a chance to maybe come back and have a do-over for things that I
do. No, it's true. It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
But as far as like the romantic connotation of some of the old cliches of like you kick a horse in a lifetime, so the next lifetime a horse tramples you, I don't think it happens quite that literally. I think somebody could do, as far as the continuation of lives, I think, let's go back to the soul. I think the soul is kind of learning, evolving. I think the infinite spirit is just infinite, but I think the soul is always learning and evolving and hopefully improving. So I think if somebody commits a really heinous human crime in a lifetime, I don't think next lifetime necessarily means that they're going to be, if say they murder somebody, I don't think necessarily they're going to be murdered in the next lifetime. If their soul and their human element open to each other and they really learn, they may be able to, let's say somebody does something really, really terrible to somebody. In the next lifetime, they may have a lifetime of service. doesn't mean they're going to be born retarded or crippled or go through some horrible thing. Maybe the next lifetime they will be actually very saintly, and they will feel very compelled to serve.
Lessons to learn, right? To evolve each time.
Yes. So
I think it's fascinating.
But just so you know, Steve, Suzanne is my shotgun partner on the show. She's not, you know. We do the show together. So.
And when she told me that she was talking to you, Valencia knows that I'm very interested. And in the last few years, I've had some interesting experiences that have really, really opened me up. You know, lots of loss in my life, and reconnecting.
I can hear that because there's a lightness to the quality of your voice, and very open and very positive as you greet people. But there's a little bit of heaviness or wounded quality that's in there as well that I could feel. But it's not wounded in the sense of morbid or staying fixated on that. It's like you're working with it. You're working those things through.
Right. That's true.
When's your birthday? I'm just curious.
It's April. April 11th.
Are you Aries or Taurus?
Yeah, Aries.
Aries, yeah. You'll be fine. Do you know that there's more? I'm going off on a tangent here, but this is really true. There's more actors, actresses, performers under the sign of Aries than any other sign.
Oh, really? That's
funny.
Yeah,
more singers, more actors, more actresses, more people that, because Aries is the child ego. It's the first sign. It can get up there and perform. Doesn't mean that every Aries person is confident, but usually they're very good.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear.
the producer would like to know if you could read her.
I'll do whatever I can do.
Okay.
I'll make no grandiose promises, but and I'm not Teresa Caputo of the Long Island.
Who wants a reading now? You've got someone coming up who's getting a reading?
Yeah, me.
Oh, you.
Yeah. I'm here.
You're there. Okay. Do you have a question? I don't need a question. I mean, you don't have
to. No,
you don't have to ask me anything. You can tell I'll just stop. I'll just start talking and I won't stop.
No, just go right ahead. I mean, I don't have to ask you a question. I feel that you'll probably be able to pick up some things just by speaking to me and hearing my voice.
I do already. I'll just throw these out, and you can make of them what you will, and I promise I won't embarrass you or say anything that's so personal that the world shouldn't hear it. But right off the bat, just hearing your voice, okay? And not trying to be Freudian psychology here, but I want to go back to, one of the first things that came through was relationship with particularly your mother when you were younger. Well, relationship with both parents, but relationship. Sometimes a relationship with a parent can be defined as much by their absence as their presence, So people say, oh, well, I didn't have a relationship with a parent because I was adopted, or I didn't have a relationship with this parent because the parent died when I was six or whatever. But that absence of the relationship and whoever stepped in or didn't step in as the role model becomes, that's a very important factor. But you still have a connection. Even all adopted children, I was an adopted child, they all have a connection to their physical parents, whether they ever meet them or not. That is irrelevant. But anyway, what I was picking up with you right off the bat, one thing that came through was, sorry, but your mother's energy overshadowed your energy. I could feel her energy very strongly, and I kept thinking, even as you were talking just briefly, just saying, your few words, I thought, okay, Mom, you need to get kind of out of the way here because she needs, she needs a few words said about her. And it was all in good intention. And not saying that the energy was negative, but if you had a child of an adult child of alcoholic parents and they said, I'm not going to be like my parents, I'm not going to drink, it would still have affected them. And they would still have certain things they needed to work out. Again and again, I run into people that say, well, this is what happened in my childhood, but I didn't recreate the pattern. But nonetheless, if you just think that you can, you know, go on without having the situation affect you. It takes a pretty remarkable person to completely be impervious to all the influences that we went through as children. So one thing, I don't know why, I just keep seeing you around the age of 6 years old going through a family, you know, something in the family that really impacted you, but it kind of gets buried and it comes out later, like in young adulthood. So that was one factor, and I don't want to go into the details of that right now. I mean, I am seeing some details with it, but I don't want to go into those yet. The other thing is, as far as being right now in between what you're doing and what you're doing, I don't mean what you're doing right at the moment, being on the radio here, but I'm talking about what you're doing in your life, you know, in your daily routine. That's about to change in a really major way within the next 2 to 3 months. That approximate time frame, there is a major shift coming for you. It has other facets to it involving the people around you in your life, you know, other family members in your immediate life, not your mother. We're not talking about her now, just talking about you and your own immediate family sphere. Let's put it this way. If I were to talk to you a year from today, what you're doing now in your life for your mainstay, your job, your main focus, it's not even going to be the same. You'll still be the same person. It's not like you're going to radically shift and become this person that you don't even recognize. But that would be cosmetic surgery if that happened. But what's going to happen here is there's going to be a total upgrade, and I want to emphasize the positive because it's very positive. This isn't something negative, or I'm not seeing something doomy, gloomy, and really scary here. What I'm seeing is a complete. It's like you're ready to graduate. It's like you're ready to take that opportunity. There's an opportunity coming. You may be working in one direction, but there's something coming to you that, you know, that is offered to you in that next 2 to 3 month period, probably 3 month period, that you would have had no way of consciously anticipating it, I mean, or identifying it until it's right there. It's like, and there's the opportunity because I can see it. It's like a hand stretched out saying, do you want this or not? And, you know, it's up to you. You don't have to take it. If it disrupts your, if you feel it's too disruptive, or let's say, you know, somebody was suddenly offered, you know, a golden opportunity for a job, but they had to relocate. Maybe they couldn't relocate. Maybe they had kids that were going to a school and they didn't want to, you know, dislodge their kids from the school. It's up to you what decision you make. But I think that what's happening here is you're being offered something that really puts you in alignment with goals that you've had all along. And it does it in a way you never could have expected. It's not like, you know, you apply for a job, you get the job, you get the, you know, you get the title and the job. This is like you arrive at the goal that you wanted, but in a way that you never, through a process that you never would have been able to envision. And it's really very complimentary because you've done a lot of, you know, really hard work to get where you are. I mean, I don't say this in any cliche sense. You're a survivor. You are a survivor. You're an emotional survivor. You're a person who has always been able to kind of roll with the punches, and there have been some big ones, actually. And so what you're doing here in that three-month period is the door is opening, the hand's coming out, it's offering this to you, and then within, like, 6 to 12 months, you're doing, like, it's like the panorama of what you're doing is so much larger than what you're doing now. I mean, it's like a flower that just blossoms, and it's wonderful. How old are you, may I ask? If you don't mind saying.
50.
That's what, okay. I think you have a very young voice, but I thought you were probably, yeah, because you worked for this. You worked really hard for this, and what's happening here is this. You know, one could say, well, why didn't the opportunity happen when I was like 23 or 30 or whatever? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when it happens, just that it's happening. So if, you know, I'll give you an example. If you were an actor or an actress who had worked and worked and worked, or if you were, you know, a really talented person who had worked and really put in pages and really put in all this effort, here comes the opportunity right at the point when you might be saying to yourself, well, I accept what's happened. I'm satisfied with, you know, this is good enough. Just when you're kind of letting go and saying, okay, you know, everything's okay, I accept this, then all of a sudden, you know, I just see that door opening and you're offered this. Also, not to worry about anything. It's not like something's going to be dangled in front of you and then taken away. It's not like, you know, this is offered to you and then all of a sudden, you know, it's not like on a Monday you get this really great news and then on a Friday the doctor says, oh, you're terminally ill. It's not like that at all. But you're no stranger to that kind of pattern that's happened to you, you know, where, you know, I can identify with that because I always say I have very, very good things happen when I have very challenging things happen. It's never just one, even in the worst circumstances, something always comes out of it for myself in my own life. I mean, I could give graphic examples, but I won't here for sake of time. Just in terms of, you know, the conditions or currents or emotional things that are going on in your home, your own personal life. Yes, that's impacted by what I was saying. It's, you know, that does change. It changes things in the sense that, you know, you are stepping into owning or taking your opportunity. And it might not be met with, you know, total, you know, you may have people around you that are very happy for you, but at the same time, people can be very happy for somebody, but if they feel threatened that the person is going to suddenly not be there for them, then there can be that to contend with. And there's a little bit of that that will go on, but it won't stop you. It won't stop you at all.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I just want to let our listeners know that Steve doesn't know anything about this producer person.
No, I don't know nothing about anything.
He gets a sense, he does a reading, and he goes back.
You know, I can give you a good example. I mean, I was joking in a way when I said that, but really, I have this little tendency, and I was saying just to my mother and a friend the other day, I said, you know, sometimes I really don't think I have any thoughts in my own head, because I will get, you know, a strong inclination about something and then the person will call. Or I will be thinking something and then later on, you know, that week, another person will bring up that topic or say the exact words. Case in point, I like to write and I have worked in some capacities in the film industry in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always dabbling with, oh, I'm going to write the great American script. Yeah, right, sure.
Uh-huh.
But, you know. But it could happen. So the last couple of years, as I was getting more earthy and used to, you know, my environment that I grew up in, I was never one to want to go out in the woods. But now I'm totally the opposite. I love being out here in the country. And so as I was walking, I started picking up on things, you know, like energy shifting and thinking like, oh, my God, all the New Agers are saying we're going into, you know, that there's a whole change of energy and that the whole earth is being transformed to the fifth dimension and not the singing group. Mm-hmm. And I started picking up on this little storyline, and the storyline involved an African-American woman who was researching her relatives or descendants' background with the Underground Railroad. And then it tied in with a guy in New England. You know, it was this whole thing. Anyway, it was very
cool. Wow.
And it went from past, present, and future, and it kind of combined all the time frames so that people were interacting from different time frames. And I had this very clear image of this woman driving across a bridge in New York, and and then her car was hit, and it was knocked off the bridge. And
oh my God.
I started thinking, so as I'm going along this summer, I'm looking on the internet, and it says, oh, this movie Cloud Atlas is coming out.
Yes,
so
I
look at it, and I start looking into what Cloud Atlas is about, and I got the book, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, this guy wrote
this
what
is
I
my
was
story.
Thinking. And then there's a scene in the movie where Halle Berry is driving in her little Volkswagen, and she gets. It's the same thing I saw in my
mind.
I said, well, there you go. It wasn't your idea.
one of the questions that I had written down is, what does it feel like when you're reading someone? Do you get a certain, like you were saying, you feel like there's no, you have no thought in your head? It's just
it
something
varies.
That comes
I mean,
to
I'm
you?
Still, I'm still me, and I'm still a human being, and I still have all
mm-hmm.
my emotions, and I have everything that I normally have in my waking state. I don't go into like an altered state. I don't channel, you know, that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm conscious. If I'm channeling,
mm-hmm.
then it's got to be, you know, something that I'm doing that I'm not even aware that I'm doing. So I don't go into any kind of trance. I'm not doing mediumship in that way, although I've picked up on, you know, discarnate spirits and people that have passed, but I don't think of it as being a medium. I don't really have a name for any of it. When I'm reading for people, it depends on the person. I think what's happening is that person is giving you permission to kind of step into a deeper part of themselves and look at things. To, you know,
mm-hmm.
like a doctor taking your blood pressure. You go in,
mm-hmm.
you're looking, you're assessing it. And so what happens to me in different situations, like with the woman whose child had been killed in the accident, I felt the sadness and I felt the tension before she actually tensed up in her body. I could feel it because I was starting to really get from her and get from the information that this loss had happened. So
mm-hmm.
when I'm reading for somebody, I try to put, this is what I try to do. I try to push my own human likes and dislikes out of the picture, I mean, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I try to open myself to the person. I say this person really wants, you know, some clarity, you know, clarification on the, they want clarity on information. It doesn't matter if it's like a really, you know, simple question like, you know, am I going to marry this person, or, you know, am I going to survive my cancer treatments, or am
mm-hmm.
I, or what's going to happen to my job? I just open. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes people say, oh, you use phrases or you start talking in a way that it's just like, you know, my mother would, you know, would, it's her exact words, or these are words that I would use. And
wow.
So it's not like my voice changes. It's not like The Exorcist. I don't suddenly start. My head doesn't spin, and I don't say things that are demonic. But
oh, good.
Yeah, but yeah, I
that
will.
Would be scary.
Some of it's empathic, and some of it is just knowing.
Wow. Well, I think we have another caller. Whoopee.
Okay.
Who is this? Oh, hi, caller. Who's
Hello.
Calling? Hi. Who's calling?
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, this is Stacy.
Hi,
oh.
Stacy. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. So, do you have anything you'd like to ask Steve, a question, or?
Can he just read me for my voice or something? I don't know.
All right.
What's going on in my life? Is it positive, negative? How should
both.
I handle things?
It's just like with anybody. It's, you know, when you say, is it positive, is it negative, it's both. But if I were to give you, if I were to evaluate it and say, is it more positive than negative, you're positive. But the circumstances are somewhat stressful. You know, that's what I would say. So it's not you, but the things around you are, you know, what I'm getting from, you know, your energy is there, how can I put this? It, you know, if you put a person in a field, but you put little bombs all, like little landmines all around, it's like you're trying really hard not to, you're trying hard to, you know, clear up or clean up a lot of things that, you know, that have already kind of, you know, challenged you. You're actually a very positive person yourself too, but the circumstances have been, you know, there's frustration there, and I can understand why, because the people, I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but there's a couple of key people around you that just are not really hearing what you're saying to them. They're not. They're really just not getting it. And what you're saying to them, you're not trying to make anybody go in a certain direction. It's not like if you had a husband or a boyfriend or whatever that you're trying to force him to believe what you're believing. But you need to be heard, and they're just not. They're not hearing you. I don't think, you know, I don't think that you're just a puppet on a string for everybody. I don't think people just push you around. But I think there's been a lot of really strong people around you in your life that have tried to steer you in the direction they think you should go in. And so what's happening here is just, how can I say this? Almost immediately, like within the next three, four weeks, there is a change. There's a change coming in the tone of a relationship, meaning there's a change coming in a one-on-one relationship that's very important to you. Emotionally, it's very important to you. And there's actually a positive shift that takes place so that you, you know, you can sit down and you can speak to this person. I'm seeing a man, you know, I'm thinking of this as a personal situation. And you're able to sit down with this person and you're able to actually communicate more effectively than you have been able to. I'm not saying that the two people, you know, you and this other person are necessarily battling and fighting and, you know, and arguing and disagreeing. I don't mean to make it sound dramatic like that, but there's a breakthrough. That's the word I'm looking for. There's a breakthrough that happens in communication, and it's coming up like almost immediately. That allows for you to be able to, you know, if you're going to a job each day or whatever you're doing in your life every day, that allows for that to be much, you know, you don't go there feeling heavy or burdened or like you're weighed down, because it's not so prominently on your mind all the time, because, you know, you have the good conversation. Things will work out in terms of smoothing over this. Are you there?
Hello?
I'm
there?
Here. Hi.
Hi. Oh, I can hear a phone ringing. That's the only reason.
Yeah, so can I. But my thing is, what about my work environment?
Your work environment, like I said, you can start to go towards, you know, with your work environment a little less of a stress or a strain. Because they're wait a minute, I'm hearing other voices. I don't mean in my head.
No, we had lost Suzanne and I was trying to get her back.
Oh, okay, so going back to my work environment.
Your work environment, yes. Okay, going back to that, now I can hear you. Okay. What I was saying before about personal relationship easing up, so that gives you more of less stress when you go to your job. On the job, there's a political change that's happening behind the scenes. You may be aware of it. I don't know what your exact position is at that work, but I would say that you at least have, you know, knowledge, or you're in on, you know, you have awareness of certain things that have needed to be changed there, that need to shift. But there's been you're not causing this. You're not causing this, but there's been a block. It's like, okay, you know, in the current, we're about to, you know, go through the election. So let's use that as an example. In the election, you've got one person saying one thing, one person saying the other. I already know who I'm voting for, and it ain't Mitt Romney.
Okay.
Not ever. You couldn't pay me $1 million to vote for him. But anyway, I won't get into that. But when you have somebody who says things that certain people think, well, that's logical, well, that makes sense, but they're really not telling the whole picture, and they're actually not telling the entire truth because they want to promote themselves, then you have a problem, especially if you've already, you know, gained support of certain people. So what I'm seeing behind the scenes is that there's going to be a shift of power. That's what I'm trying to say. There's going to be a shift of power behind the scenes. Depending how this affects you, which, you know, is more important because you're the one asking the question.
Yeah.
It does not wipe your job out. It does not demote you or put you at a lower scale in the job. Even if you were self-employed, I'd still be saying the same thing, because we would be talking about clients then. So
mm-hmm.
It still applies even to a self-employed person, because you would be talking about your clientele. The shift puts you actually at a higher rung of the ladder, because what it does, let's say in a corporation, there's a problem. So what they decide to do is they get rid of a couple of positions and they merge other positions in. They kind of combine them. So what's happening here is, the good news is, you actually come out of this ahead. You come out of it with a little bit more status, power, even a little bit more pay. But instead of wearing two hats, you're wearing four, because for a period of time, you're doubling and tripling and, you know, up on the amount of work that you'll be doing. So I would say to expect that in the job, you're going to be even, you're going to be much busier. You may be already very busy, but you'll be even busier, even like insanely busy. But it's positive because what it does is it levels off and it leaves you intact. But other people, somebody there, you know, somebody associated with what you do is definitely leaving. And I don't know if they're leaving under like a controversial way, like they get, you know, forced out or fired, or they just quit. I'm not sure how it happens, but somebody's leaving and it creates a gap and the gap gets filled. But it actually, I'll put it really simply, somebody else's loss in the long run is your gain. You gain from somebody else's, you know, change. And it needs to happen. Because you're an intelligent person and you're a good worker, but you can't keep going into a workplace where there's this tension, and there's tension there, and that tension has to be resolved, and actually it needs to be removed altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And because it just can't keep going, because people, you know, what happens is divided people, you know, so that, you know, you've got factions now. You've got one group and another group, and you're like Switzerland. You're kind of in the middle. You understand what's going on. Like if somebody wanted a union to come into work, but another group didn't want the union to come in, you'd be the person that would see both sides of the story and say, well, I see their point and I see their point. Doesn't mean you wouldn't have a preference for one side or the other, but you're very objective in that you could look and say, I understand what she's saying and I understand what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, both groups will try to pull you in, and you're kind of an independent, and you aren't going. You're a very independent person. You're not going to be pulled in. But in the process, does that mean as an independent that you'll be squeezed out of your position, or that your job will, you know, that you will suffer the loss of your job, or suffer, you know, in terms of your status at work? I don't think so. I think there's going to be a major shift. There's going to be some people. You know, there's going to be some people.
Steven?
Hello.
Hi, have another reading. Stacy, thank you so much.
But you cut him off. I wanted to hear the rest.
He's here.
Oh, okay.
I know. You know, but you got a lot.
I did. Is he still there?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here. I haven't fallen off the earth.
No. Okay, no. Thank you very much. I mean... thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for calling, Stace.
You're welcome. Steve. Have a blessed day, everybody.
Thank you. Stevie, we've got
I'm right here.
Would she like a reading, too?
Who is this?
Suzanne. She was on before, and now
on before. Oh, yeah, Suzanne with the really nice voice.
Yeah. Hi, Suzanne.
Not that we don't all have nice voices, but Suzanne has a really smooth quality to her voice.
You want to hear?
I couldn't resist. I said, let me see if maybe he feels anything he can share with me today.
Hmm? Okay. Now I'm going to sound like the gypsy fortune teller. Because I don't usually do this, you know, like in this manner, but that doesn't matter. I'm going to go with what comes. I'm going to go and what's coming through. Okay. First of all, before going into all these, you know, talks about, you know, with everybody else so far, I've talked about quality of energies and how other people are impacting and what's going on in terms of, you know, eventual changes or shifts.
Uh-huh.
With you right now at this moment, since we're, you know, we're kind of in an energy field together, this is going to, and again, don't take this as a prediction, but this is what I'm seeing. So sometimes what a person sees is symbolic, not literal, but in this case, I really feel this very strongly. I don't know how much you travel, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know you personally, and I don't know how much you travel. But what I picked up on immediately when you said, is there anything that he can see for me today? And immediately I got this picture of the map of the state of California, and I got the whole West Coast, and I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, sometimes graphic things like that do come across.
Huh.
I don't pretend to know what that means, but I get it very strongly. That was one thing. So I just wanted to throw that out put that on the table. What that means, I'm not sure. But it was there, and it was strong, and it was strong enough where I argued with myself, and the little voice inside said, don't argue with me, just say it. So I'm saying it.
Okay.
So I saw California, and I saw not only just a little map of California, but, you know, of course, connected to you, and you connected to it. So that, and there was a little, the time frame I feel on that was 6 or 7 months. So
okay.
I'm not saying that, I'm not predicting, and I'm not suggesting or telling you go to California. Go west.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, but I could feel a very strong influence connected there. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a travel, but there is a very strong connection coming from that. Now, beyond that, you directly. Interesting. This is also going to sound strange. How much interaction do you have with people that are sort of in the entertainment field?
Quite a bit. I mean, yeah.
Because
some.
The second thing I saw, and this has nothing to do with California, this just had to do with you. I'm just looking at. I'll tell you what I physically was doing. I was kind of looking off to the right. I don't know what a psychologist would say about people that stare up to the right or left, but I know that there's different designations of where our brain supposedly goes. But what I saw was a theatrical setting, and I saw you standing there talking to people. But you weren't just talking to people. You were participating in some degree. Somebody was, I don't know if, it wasn't like you were a theater critic or whatever, but you were actually scoping something out, checking it out, kind of comparing notes with somebody. So there was a mutual interaction. It wasn't just you going and attending, like, you know, somebody's performance. It was like you were comparing your ability to this person's ability, not in any vain sense, but just saying, oh, that's really interesting. It's like two people, like if you had two people playing the cello and they both admired each other's skill at playing the instrument. It's like you were admiring this person's ability. And it was a woman, and you were talking to her, and it was, you know, it was the mutual admiration society of you and this other person. But it was very strong, and I got that. So, I'm getting really, you know, really solid pictures and really solid information that is every day that you can apply to actual circumstances rather than just qualities of energy. The other thing that I got, and these things all came in at once, so it's sort of like you open the closet door and they all fell out. So they weren't like one thing came in and one thing came in. They all fell out at the same time. The other thing was, and this, not to worry, I'm just saying that this is what came out. Over that scope of that same 6 to 7 month period, I also saw this courtroom setting. I know you're not getting in any trouble, don't worry. But I saw you know, like the suggestion of a legal situation. And it's not you being called to jury duty. It was something, you know, in your own life. So it wasn't something, you know, where you get a, you know, you have to appear for grand jury or anything or criminal trial to testify or be on a jury. It was just you looking something over and making a decision of some sort, being asked to make a decision. And that was really strong. That one was really strong. And you were very matter-of-fact. It was like your resolve or your intention was very direct. You're thinking, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And that was very smooth, and it was quick. It was just sort of like it was a long build-up, and then all of a sudden you were saying, yep, I know what my decision is, and you were just there and making your decision.
Could it be something that happened already, or is it something that's just something you see?
It's linked to a whole series of things that have already happened. But there was one more facet that hadn't played itself out that you didn't expect to come back like a boomerang.
Okay.
And so that's why it was so strong, because it seemed like it had already been resolved and had already happened, but there was a facet that opened back up again.
Okay.
So I would expect that if something has already been resolved in a legal sense, that there's one more, you're going to revisit that again, not because you're approaching it, but somebody else is kind of bringing it up again. So I can tell you when it's done this time, it's completely finished. You know, completely
okay.
finished. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to even consider, you know, even ponder it anymore after that.
Okay.
And then one other thing that fell out, because it was like, you know, there were like six things that fell out of the closet all at the same time. relationship. Ah, now we can actually talk about one. relationship, there's a variable there. And if you say, oh, no, I've been married for 20 years and I'm really happy and everything like that, I'm not going to take that away from you. But there, I'm just looking at the quality of this interactive, you know, thing with this other person, which I looked at and I said, well, that's definitely a relationship. You know, actually, a relationship that has, there's depth there. This isn't just like, oh, I met somebody last week and, you know, what's going to happen? Is it going to pan out? Is it going to work? This is something that had, everything with you had a history. Everything that fell out of the closet had some link back to a chain of events. So nothing, there was nothing, other than the California thing, there was nothing that had this sudden kind of out of left field quality about it. Nothing. Everything was logical and sequential, which is probably well linked to who you are, because you're the kind of, I can say this before I finish the thing about the partnership, you're the kind of person that goes from beginning to middle to end. You tend to not leave things unfinished. You tend to try to execute a plan of action and follow through. Unlike me. You tend to be this person that's very thorough. So anyway, back to this relationship. The relationship has some changes that take place, some negotiating, and some decisions that are made according to the individuality of the two people. Can I say that everybody's on the same page at the same time? No, I can't say that. Can I say that it gets worked out in a way that's acceptable for both people, even pleasant for both people? Yes, I can say that. But the important thing is, again, like the other caller, to be heard, to get your point across, not in the sense of jamming it down somebody's throat or forcing it on anybody, but being able to state your case and then just kind of leave it, you know, like say what you have to say, express the emotion, express the feeling. But then, you know, what I was seeing is like you're putting it on the table and then just leaving it there. Waiting for the, you know, the ball is going to be in the other person's court. You know, the man that I was seeing, it's going to be his option is to react or not react or to do whatever he's going to do. And you're not trying to dictate or force anybody's hand here. But but he needs to make a decision. He really does, and he needs to be, you know, I'm not faulting him, but if he says something, he needs to follow through. You know, it's not going to work if he says one thing and then changes it in midstream without any warning. That's not going to work at all. He needs to be very consistent, and he needs to be very honest and open. And if he has any doubts, he needs to say, "I have doubts." You know, because you can't deal, you know, you can't deal equitably with somebody that's going to say, "Yeah, I understand. I feel the same way," and then just turns around and does the opposite, because that does not work. That does not work for you. You know, you're the kind of person, if you say something, you mean it. You're not a dishonest person whatsoever. You're not full of you're not a person that I don't have to second guess. If you tell me something, I don't have to look and say, did she really mean this or did she really mean that? You're very direct, and you're very fair, but you expect that in return. Anyway, does
very
any
interesting.
Of that help? Yeah.
Yeah. No, it did. Yeah,
and
yeah,
and
no,
there
I
are
like
more
that.
Details, but they probably, I don't want to share them here on the phone. So.
Okay, I'll call you later.
Feel free.
No, that was great. Thank you.
I guess I'll
thank
sneak
you.
One in for myself. Can I
Valencia?
Sneak one in for myself? Yeah, can I sneak one in for me too?
You can sneak one in because I have something to say to you, and it's okay, you don't mind everybody hearing it.
Oh, I don't know.
As I was walking to the post office this morning, I had this nice little, you know, beautiful walk over a mile back, and I was thinking about the show. But then, as I was thinking about the show, you came into mind separate from the show completely, and it was around your daughter.
Oh. The love of my life, my soulmate.
She is one of your soulmates. Oh, that's the other thing. I think people can have more than one soulmate. Like
really?
I said, if there are groups of souls that are connected, then definitely there are soulmates plural in many cases.
Wow.
I know people really think of soulmate as being their love life or their partner, and I'm not taking that away from people, but I think soulmate is a much larger concept. And yes, your daughter is one of your deepest connections. Because she came into this lifetime to balance some energies that got thrown off the track last time. Because I really do believe in reincarnation, and I think she's really here to clean some things up. And I think she can, and I think she's doing it, and I think she will succeed. The one thing I've always said to you, because I've always seen it, is check in with her when she's about 25, and you're going to be really amazed. You're going to be amazed at who she turns out to be.
Really?
And
I do feel that.
She is not a person. How can I put this? When all the hormones and everything that's happening in her formative development calm down, which they're not calm right at the moment. when that all calms down, it's like I'm not saying that one day she just wakes up and like, oh, I'm a different person. I mean, no, she's a fiery individual. But there is a point around age 20 that where she just at one little interval there she says, I need to focus, and I'm going to focus right now. And when she applies herself to this focus, Hurricane Sandy can't knock her off. Nothing will knock her off this focus. And
when
she's focused on that, she will be like a dog on a bone. Don't try to take it away from her. Not that you would, but it won't even matter if she's in a relationship at that point. If that relationship does not support that goal, the relationship will be kicked out the window because she's going to do this. Right now, she's still going through this social, she's going through the fun house, the house of mirrors when it comes to her social life.
Right.
And she's trying to figure out which reflection is really her own, because she's seeing all this stuff and she's really, and she's a lot clearer, you can tell me, oh, no, she's gone off the deep end. She really hasn't. And she's a lot clearer than she was 2 years ago. She's much clearer.
I feel that.
Yeah, she really is. I mean, she's really starting to ground herself. And yes, she's had some frustrations because, I don't care what the school system says. If they labeled her this way or that way, that does, I'm going to just say it. And now I am playing God. They don't know what they're talking about fully. They really don't know what they're talking about. She's growing into her energy. That's all that's happening. She's not imbalanced. She's not learning disabled in any respect. I was never good at math, but I was not learning disabled. Part of it was emotional, and part of it was just the way I perceived things. I couldn't understand math. As an adult, it all fell into place.
And that's her. Math is not her strong suit.
That's why,
I
wanted to use that example. What's that?
But it's okay. That's life, right?
It's really okay because it's not everybody's forte. Everybody's cup of tea isn't math. Mine certainly wasn't.
Mine either.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this, too. She's extremely creative.
Oh, yeah.
She's very creative, and she has an imagination that is unbounded. The thing is, she needs a framework for that, and you are trying to provide that and give her options and give her an opportunity to be able to express that. She's not always sure, because she's... this is going to sound like the weirdest comparison ever, but all the flap in the media about Lindsay Lohan and Lindsay Lohan going off the deep end every 5 minutes. Well, your daughter has similar energy. She has Lindsay Lohan energy, except without the. What's that?
I said not Lindsay Lohan.
She has a similarity in that her energy goes along and then kind of seems to misfire and goes off to the left.
Yeah.
But she always
pulls herself
back. She pulls herself back and she gets herself, under control, unlike Lindsay Lohan. That's where she isn't similar to her.
Okay.
And she starts to look at herself and saying, that wasn't a wise choice. So she does know the difference. She is not chemically imbalanced. And Lindsay Lohan, I think, is operating under a chemical imbalance. She inherited it through a parent. You know, she's got an alcoholic parent. She inherited that. Your daughter did not inherit a chemical imbalance. She is not imbalanced chemically. She just has a ton of energy and a ton of energy that doesn't know, doesn't relate to age. So it's like when she was 10, there was a part of her that was 50. Now that she's older, there's a part of her that's like, that, you know, that doesn't necessarily want to grow up. So educationally, there is nothing deficient about her, but she's not going to perform academically in any kind of in any kind of conventional way. So she will have gaps. She'll have things that she excels at, and other things that are going to just, you know, they don't make sense to her, and she won't do them if they don't make sense. She will fight you on them. If it doesn't make sense, she can't do it. And she just throws her hands up in the air and says, you know, I know I'm supposed to get this done, but I can't stand it. And just won't make sense to her. But that is, you know, that's all going to come into focus when she's about 20. Now, for you, getting away from your daughter, had enough of the spotlight. For you yourself, doesn't matter. I've known you in different guises and what you do for your, you know, for your bread and butter money. It has little to nothing to do with the creative energy that you have inside, and you have a ton of it, and it's exploding to get out right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're like the volcano that is just about to erupt.
Call me Vesuvius.
Vesuvius, Mount Etna,
like
the whole thing. Mount St. Helens, you're all of them. And it's about to erupt in a very positive way. And this is going to maybe surprise you, but what I see is not just stage work, but I actually see I see you working in some medium of expression such as writing, painting, something that you're actually physically putting this into a form that other people can examine, not just a performance on a stage.
Wow.
So you may not have ever fancied yourself capable. You might say, "Well, I have the eye of the artist. I can appreciate, you know, I can appreciate color and form and texture, but I don't have, you know, the ability to, you know, sit down and draw a stick figure on paper." But I'd say you definitely do. You just don't think you do.
Okay.
But I see that coming into play over the next 2 years. That's going to push its way. It's gonna escape. It's going to get out of the box. So your husband better be, you know, prepared for the fact that you're going to be, you know, a creative, wild woman.
Okay. We've got him
because he will, you know, he knows you have the talent and the ability, and you've worked together, and he's worked with you on that before. But this is nothing like that. This is huge. This is like a total... It's a total unleashed force of energy that just comes out, and you need to you need to let it out. Now I'll shut up.
Well, Steve, this has been glorious and wonderful, and I want you to tell people where they can contact you if they want a reading, an additional anybody who's had a reading.
Sometimes I do come into the city so I can, you know, maybe see people one-on-one at some point, but I don't have a business card.
That would be great.
I
think people would like to know that.
Yeah, I do come in occasionally. I used to come in a lot, but I don't get as much opportunity anymore. I didn't used to do a lot of this up where I live because the people up here, they just weren't as open to it, but now that's changed. So it keeps me from venturing out too much. Not just because I'm an old person now, but because I'll never be old ever. The way to get a hold of me is I do have a home phone. And this is going to sound crazy. At the moment, I don't have a cell phone. I washed my cell phone in the washing machine. So I won't give the cell phone number because it won't lead anywhere except to recording saying that this person is not available. They're not available because they're in the washing machine going through the spin cycle. My number is 603-847-2000. 3483. And that is in the state of New Hampshire. which is like mid, you know, like central to northern New England. Quite a different environment from New York, but doable. I'll just say that, doable. Pretty nice, doable. Not my
relaxing.
Relaxing, but not my actual preference. And I was born and raised here, so maybe I'm just saying that because I've had too much of it. But it's great. But it's a great place in many ways. But it's still a little bit, still a little repressed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when you think of New England, you think of old, you know, the more occult side of it, like haunted houses and old energy. There's tons of that here, tons, a lot of it. So, yeah, that's how to get a hold of me, that little phone number, 603-847-3483. And somebody will always answer because my mother's at the house, my sister's at the house, my nephew's at the house, the two dogs. The dogs won't answer. And
I'm sure you're going to get a lot of calls because you provided some really interesting information for me and what I heard of the other callers. And I think it's very helpful for people to be able to get some kind of connection that's not their usual connection. You know, talking to your friends is one way to do it, but if you open yourself up, if you can get even a nugget of it, if you're at all open to believing, I think it just can be such a nice guidance and a tool. So I thank you.
Well, thank you. And I have to give due credit to Eleanor, the person I learned from, because without, she had a vested interest. She had nobody to read for her. I was 17 years old, so she said, I'm going to show you how to read, because she wanted readings. But she was the real thing. And if I had never met her, it never would have occurred to me to do this.
Right. No, but
so,
it's such a gift to give and such a great thing to be able to give back.
Thank you. Enjoyed this.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Oh,
yeah,
I am there? Oh, good. Okay, I thought I fell off. I'm sorry. But thank you, Suzanne, for, you know, always being there and being my buddy.
Oh, my pleasure always.
On the show, I thought we had another caller, but it might have been me because I redialed in. But, Steve, I want to tell you how much I adore you, number one.
Well, it's mutual.
Good. And how wonderful it always is for you to, you gave so much great information and I think cleared up so many things for me and I hope my listeners about, you know, some things that seem so vague and so distant and you put them in, I think, a model that could work for anyone's beliefs, you know.
That's the key to reading for people is you're interpreting, you're an interpreter. You're reflecting and interpreting another person's energy, and it needs to be useful for them, and it needs to be accurate, because if it's not accurate and it's not useful, then the person needs to shut their mouth and not talk. You know,
right.
They need to be there, you know, being of service and use. I mean, there's a lot of psychotherapists that could take a hint.
Yeah, right. And I think, you know, the one word that I really liked that you just used was of service. Because just for someone to go blah, 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 isn't always being of service to that person. Everything doesn't fit, you know, a certain person's. And you, like I said, you're reading their energy and not your energy. So I think that's a beautiful way to frame it. And, you know, maybe we'll have maybe we'll come down and do a party. How about that, Suzanne? We'll do a Steve party.
Oh, I'll come. I'll come there. Road trip.
Well, that would be
a spiritual road trip.
A great excuse to come down to the city.
Yeah, we have you.
And
come
I
down
love
to the
and
city.
I love New York. New York's like my second home.
Oh yeah.
Oh good.
So we'll have a party. We'll have a Steve party, and we'll invite friends, and you can, you know, share your gift.
Okay, now that I know that you're on the air, I can listen into your other shows too.
Yeah. You know, you are always welcome. Welcome. Oh, and I want to say one more thing about our next show, now that you brought it up. It's kind of like our Thanksgiving show, and it's going to be at the Aquaba Inn in Brooklyn, which is a beautiful bed and breakfast.
Absolutely
and,
beautiful place.
Yeah, and the theme is called The Gathering. So it's about people getting together, and we're going to have one of our little panelists, you know, to-dos, where we just talk about, you know, the idea of gathering together with friends and talk about memories we have around gatherings and how we want to bring that back and how much fun it can be when you get together with people you care about and share, you know, whether it's wine or coffee or muffins or a big dinner, that there's something wonderful about that. So we're going to be doing that. And the owner of Aquaba Inn, Monique Greenwood, who's also been an editor at Essence and a contributing editor at Essence, is the owner of these wonderful bed and breakfasts across the country, which we will hope to have some pictures posted so you can see them. But that's what's happening, Steve, when and that'll be on November 10th. So
wonderful.
Tune in and call in too, you know? I want you to call in.
Oh yeah, I'd love to be a caller. I have questions too.
Yay. That'll be cool. And Suzanne will be there and as usual. And
we hope
to give you guys something to talk about while you're having your Thanksgiving dinner. So, I've got 4 minutes. So, Steve, anything else you want to have to say? 4 minutes.
I want to remember my etiquette, and I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to be on here because it's always useful because just talking about this gives me a chance to brush up and to step back and say, okay, now that you're having to actually account for what you do to other people, you know, account what you're doing, and you're delivering this information to other people, it gives me a chance to stand back and kind of evaluate and say, okay, am I on track? Am I real? Because, you know, I do so much of this. I do it every day. But sometimes I don't resent it. I love doing it, but it can get to be kind of, you know, like it gets to be – there is a work element that kind of, like,
you're just going along with it,
and you think, like, oh – And what may be impressive to one client or one person that you're talking to, you just think, like, did I really do a good job? Did I really say enough? You know, was I really spot on? Did I really get the information? Because I'm just on the delivering end, not on the, you know, I receive the warmth from the person, but I'm on the delivering end. So I tend to be a little self-critical. So I think, like, did I do enough?
You were fantastic.
Yeah, not bad. I think it's good. It just, you kind of keep exercising with a different crowd, and you get kind of hopefully get to reaffirm your gifts, you know.
Yeah, there was a reaffirmation, and the other thing is too that, you know, I wanted to be respectful and hold the person's confidentiality, so I didn't. There were certain details I didn't impart because it just isn't necessary for, you know, it to be on public display.
For public consumption.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Steve, I want to have you back anytime you want to come on, please, you know.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, because, one, I love you to pieces, and, two, you know, I'm sure other people will want to hear you and, you know, get some of your open and honest feedback about things they want to know about.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
true.
It's
just
a great way.
And it's wonderful. Everybody I've talked to, you know, very positive. Very positive today.
But you're positive.
Positive
means positive. All righty. So I just want to say love you much. And we'll see you guys or I'll hear you. And maybe you can see me. And Suzanne on November 10th when we're at the Aquaba Inn in Brooklyn, owned by Monique Greenwood.
We are going to be there, and it's going to be great.
Yep, businesswoman extraordinaire. So I think that's it. Is that it, producer lady? Okay, Steve, I love you.
I love you, too. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Happy Saturday.
Bye-bye.
Bye,
Suzanne.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Welcome to You, the Best Invention Ever, featuring host Valencia Lyle Saunders, a show dedicated